Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.
With us today is Laura Elizabeth. Laura is a designer with a hankering for cross-stitch and rockets. She runs Design Academy, which aims to help developers conquer their fear of design. She's also launched her first product called Client Portal, a client-friendly way to keep your products organized. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
Before we kind of get started, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe how you got started in the industry?
Yeah, so I'm a designer and I've been a designer for the past maybe 8 years or so. I studied it throughout college and university and everything. Traditionally, I've been a freelancer. So for the last, I think, 7 years or so, I've been a freelance designer who worked with various different clients. I recently became interested in, instead of just doing design, I became interested in teaching design because a lot of my clients were actually developers. I kind of heard the same issues over and over again. And I had these developers who had these fantastic ideas. They had so many ideas for these projects, but they were really stuck on how to make it look decent. They didn't necessarily want it to be, you know, amazing, but they just wanted it to look not bad. The problem that they had was that when they're kind of starting these projects, maybe they wanted them to be open source, or maybe they just wanted them to be side projects until they can figure out whether they can actually make, you know, any kind of money off it. They couldn't hire a designer. So they didn't have the money there to hire a designer. So they really wanted to learn kind of just enough design to be able to make something look good before they got to the stage where they could hire someone. So I was really interested in that because as I was going through college and university, I actually was a really bad designer and I struggled so much to learn design. I kind of persevered with it, but it took so many years until I felt like I was actually decent. A big problem that I had was everything that I was taught was, and I'm not necessarily saying this is a bad thing, but everything I was taught was all about, you know, ideas and problem solving, which is great. But I was kind of like, okay, I get that. And that's really important. But how do I make the thing look decent? Like, how do I make it look, you know, so I'm not embarrassed by it. So I feel like someone can actually give me money in exchange for this thing. I never really found that. So over the last couple of years or so, I've been trying to teach developers how to learn design and actually just make something look decent and not go through all those crazy struggles that I went through throughout university.
I've always relied pretty heavily on some kind of UI framework and played around and worked on applications with UI, with Yahoo User Interface Library, really enjoyed front-end development once Bootstrap became a thing. And now everything looks like Bootstrap. Now Material UI and Material Design is a thing. And a lot of applications are starting to look very Google-ish. How can developers that maybe only have experience using those UI frameworks get to be better developers and learning how to be better at design?
I don't actually think there's anything wrong with using frameworks. I'd actually encourage a lot of developers to continue to use them because they are really good in terms of, you know, speeding up time and just being able to get something in front of you that you can work with. The way I prefer to teach design is instead of saying, okay, this is how you're going to go from blank screen to amazing, unique design, I kind of teach it in the sense that get something up that's got good content in or that's very usable, you know, if you're doing an app that's got everything that a user's going to need to do. Just get it there in front of you and don't worry too much about how it looks. And then when you've got that, the trick is to be able to look at that and see what's wrong with it and then tweak it based on that. And I actually think frameworks are a really good way to start because it gets you something up. And like I say, I don't really teach developers how to become amazing designers because most of the time they don't want to. They like to code, they like to make things, they like to build things, but they just want to be able to quickly make something look decent. you know, often they know the difference between a design they like and a design they don't like, but they're not quite sure why they don't like what they've done and why they do like what someone else has done. So it's kind of learning to see the difference and apply it to your own work. So, I mean, I would say, so start with a framework if that's what you're used to. But at the same time, I think, you know, without getting too much into the kind of details, the really important thing is to just kind of learn an exercise that I really like to try and do when I'm looking at a design that I've made, say, with a framework, and then a design that I really like that I don't know how it's been made. Maybe it's been with a framework, maybe it hasn't. Is to just get them up on the screen side by side and write down a list of as many different bullet points as to why I like the one on this side, what's missing from the one on my side. And often it's nothing big. It's kind of crazy how good design is actually ridiculously simple. And when you do this exercise, what you'll realize is most of the things that you're writing down are things like, you know, have a lot more space between each element, you know, give it more room to breathe. Maybe you're looking at the typography and you see like, you see they've used a lighter gray for the subheading and a darker gray for the heading. And this sounds really trivial and it sounds really kind of like, oh, if I apply this, how is this actually going to improve my work? But what I've noticed as I was learning design is it's actually these tiny little insignificant sounding details that once added up makes a really, really nice design. And that's really all there is to design. It's not like this huge thing. You don't need to become like an illustrator and create these amazing like Basecamp style drawings. You can do so much with just these tiny details that almost don't seem worth your effort, but they are. So if you actually start to do them, you can actually become a really good designer with a framework pretty easily.
Yeah, that's really interesting and a useful tool to go from, I don't like this website, but I don't know why, or I do like this website, but I don't know why. You know, maybe it's, I don't like this website because they're using Comic Sans, and no one should use Comic Sans for anything. But along those lines with frameworks and such, I know Clayton has been doing a lot with like CSS Grid, and there's Flexbox is coming on strong, and there are all kinds of tools for the web developer and designer hybrid to really kind of get into trouble or just start throwing things at a page before they realize that this either looks good or I've made a horrible, horrible mess.
When something becomes a horrible, horrible mess, it's usually because there wasn't enough planning beforehand rather than because you don't know how to make something look good. I think what I'd really recommend, especially when you're using frameworks, I know I did talk about how they speed up the time it takes to get from zero to, you know, MVP or something. However, what that doesn't mean is that you can just, you know, have an idea and then just start throwing things at a page. You do really need to think about what the best experience is going to be. And I'll kind of talk about it from a website point of view, just because it's a little bit easier, but you can apply this to apps and stuff as well. But what I really like to do when I start a website design is I just start in a Google Doc. And this is what I teach other people to do. Don't allow yourself to use anything but a Google Doc when you're doing a website. And what you need to do is, say you're doing a landing page, you need to write your copy in this Google Doc. And the copy needs to be really good because ultimately the copy is more important than the design. The design needs to work with the copy. But also, instead of just writing, you know, just paragraphs and paragraphs of text, try to format as much as you can in the Google Doc to make it readable. So, you know, use things like that Google has, you know, heading one, heading two, heading three, and they're all pre-formatted. It's got introduction text, you've got bullet points, you've got numbered lists, you've got all sorts of different things you can do in any, you know, word processor. And basically try to make a website out of a Google Doc. That's really good because you're going to be spending a lot of time there. It's not going to be easy. It's always the hardest part of any project that I do, but it's really the most important. What I usually say to people is, you know, if your website could convert as a Google Doc, you're doing it right. you can't go wrong with a design. If you have started so incredibly strong, you don't have to worry about the design turning out horrible, because it's not going to, because it's going to work. That's a really important thing. And I actually know somebody who he has like a services business, and his landing page literally was a Google Doc, and he converted like crazy. And I can't remember the actual figures that he earned, but he earned, like, he sold humongous projects for a lot of money just with the Google Doc website. So that's kind of how important that is to start with that. So even though, yeah, frameworks will save you time, there's still that, there's still so much upfront work. It just kind of saves you time from going from the Google Doc to browser.
When the internet was created, it was created with the concept of a newspaper in mind. That's why we have, you know, H1, H2 and all that. When you're writing the Google Doc, do you think about it like that? Do you think about it like a newspaper outline?
Yeah, kind of. So when I'm writing things for the web, what I really try to steer clear of is things like big paragraphs. So, you know, if we're talking about a newspaper, they're going to have a lot of big chunks of text. You know, it's an article that you're going to read. Unless you're designing a blog, you're not really going to want huge chunks of text. So you always have to keep in mind when you're doing this that this is probably going to need some visuals. Maybe it needs screenshots. Maybe it needs icons. You know, maybe you can commission some illustrations. I don't know. Whatever needs to be there, there's going to need to be some visuals. So you kind of need to be thinking about how it's going to look when you're writing the Google Doc. But what I do to try and, you know, get past this and help with this is to have a bunch of inspiration websites that I really like, that I think do really well. They don't have to be competitors. It's actually preferable if they're not, because you don't want to copy, especially a competitor. But just websites that you think work really well, especially from a conversion standpoint. So if it looks like it converts well and it's pleasing to the eye, that's where you want to be. You don't necessarily want to copy the most beautiful website in the world, because, you know, you're a developer, you're not trying to make the most beautiful website in the world. You're trying to sell a product or whatever you're trying to do, get an email opt-in or something. So yeah, so I would say, so when I do this document thing, I try to keep paragraphs really short. So they're usually just like a sentence or maybe two maximum. And I can do things like, so say for example, I've got a paragraph, and in that paragraph is kind of three points that I'm trying to make. I'll separate those out into three bullets, maybe with a heading and some subtext or something. When I then look at the inspiration websites that I've got, I can say, okay, so I've got three points. They're kind of this format. What other websites have this kind of format on there? So I can say, okay, maybe I have three columns and all those points are in three columns with an icon on top, or maybe they're stacked underneath each other and there's a screenshot to the left or the right, or maybe it zigzags down the page. Or, you know, once you've got those content blocks, you can then look to the different websites that you like and figure out how you want to display that on the page. And then you can take that down. Maybe you've got a testimonial. You can look at your inspiration websites and see all the different types of testimonials. In the end, what you're really doing is you're kind of mix and matching different websites to make your own. And then you put your branding on top of that. So your fonts, your colors, whatever you end up using, and you make it into something that first and foremost works because you've started content first. But secondly, looks good because you're using patterns that already exist, and you're not trying to just reinvent the wheel and do something too unique. So that's pretty much the exact process I use when I design. And it's what I encourage a lot of other people to do when they're starting out.
All right. When you get to like your colors and your fonts and all that, do you use like a style guide?
Yeah. So, but I tend to do the style guide sort of midway through the project. So I don't start with a style guide. So I wouldn't say, okay, these are going to be, this is going to be my accent color. This is going to be my base color. This is going to be my button hover color or anything like that, because it's quite a lot of work doing a style guide first and then applying it and then finding that you don't like it. I try to do all my experiments without a style guide, but always keep the style guide in mind. So what you want to do is you want to, you know, there's a ton of different methods for finding colors, and it's kind of hard to explain on a podcast when I can't really show you. But say you find some colors that you like and you want to use it, you know, you just try it in your website. And even if you like it then and right then, I wouldn't put it in StarGuide straight away because you've got to test it first. Maybe use this color elsewhere and it fails a color contrast checker or something. And there's just some reason that you can't use the color. So I would really recommend absolutely do a StarGuide because they're just so useful, especially if your business grows and you need to hire someone, or you just need to give brand assets to people, or you want someone to set up a landing page for you and you want them to, you know, use your brand rather than them guessing. It's a really, really good idea to have a style guide. But wait until you've kind of tested your design a bit first. So wait until, you know, you're pretty confident that you like these colors and you like these fonts and they're versatile and you can actually use them.
Do you have any resources for like style guide templates or like kind of coming up with the key elements of what would go into that style guide?
So I've tried so many different things, and in all honesty, what I do is I just create a very basic like bare notes app thing with my colors and my typography and anything else I need. But I've done the whole scale. So I've done like huge pattern library style stuff all the way down to this kind of really basic stuff. And for me, the basic stuff works better, but that's because I'm a very small company. I'm pretty much a one-person company. I have a developer and a VA, both part-time, so I don't need to spend a lot of time doing this style guide. So I've also used things like Frontify, which are a really good starting point. I used Frontify back when they had a free version. Now it's like a monthly payment. Wouldn't necessarily recommend paying monthly for something like this. I've also started to use, it's not really a style guide, but Tailwind. Me and my developer use that kind of framework with the new redesign that we're doing for Design Academy. And that's pretty good because you can define all your colors and you can define everything in there. But yeah, in terms of when you're just starting out, honestly, just have some kind of document that you can share with people that has hex codes or whatever you use. A Dropbox folder maybe with your fonts in, and I just have like a brand assets folder that's got my logos, my fonts, and then a little sheet with colors. So that's really all you need to do to get started.
Awesome. And then this kind of goes back a little bit to what you were talking about with laying out copy inside of a Google document. Is there a particular, or are there sort of patterns that you find yourself kind of falling into or arranging ideas into because you find them to be better at lending themselves towards good designs?
Yeah, I think the most important thing when it comes to patterns is what I touched on earlier about keeping sentences really short. It's really hard to design paragraphs of text if you're doing a marketing website. If you're doing a blog or something, it's fine because it needs to just be readable like a book. But I remember back when I worked with clients, it would be the worst because I'd ask for content and I wouldn't really tell them how to write the content. And they'd just come up with just paragraphs of this text that nobody wanted to read and didn't even really sound that good. And that's really hard to design. I mean, how do you design a block of text like other than just putting it on the page? And that's a big mistake that I see a lot of new designers make, is they feel like they can't edit content to make a design better. So, you know, I would say if you're using content that someone's given you, if they've given you big blocks of text, just try to pick ideas out of it and make some kind of, you know, heading that's like a few words and then maybe like a subheading under that. And that works really well because it's super skimmable. So if someone's looking at your website, they can, you know, see, for example, my client portal website, you know, I have things like that says, you know, easily manage your clients' files or, you know, something like that, some kind of readable thing that tells you what it is to do. And then if they want to read any more, you can have a little bit of subtext underneath. And honestly, that's a pattern I use all the time because it's really good for skimmability, really easy to design. You just need to have a big heading and then some maybe slightly lighter colored text underneath. Make sure you keep the line length really short. So I think it's between I can't remember, it's like 50 or 80 characters or something. You can Google that, whatever the optimal line length for reading is. Don't make that too long, just make it short. Pick out little words maybe and make them bold, or, you know, do a little highlighter thing on them. You know, there's so many little things that you can do, just that really simple pattern. And that's basically one I use constantly, because if you design that nicely, you put a screenshot next to it with one of those fake browser things, which is just a rectangle and three colored circles. You know, I know we're not talking about anything groundbreaking, and I know it's kind of in a way contributing to the whole everything looks the same. But when you're a developer and you've got a side project and you want to get it out and you want it to look decent, I wouldn't worry about making it stand out, because once your product is at a stage where it's making decent money, you can then hire a designer and invest in that and then make it stand out. Don't try and reinvent the wheel if you're new to it.
Now, you've gone from freelancing to products full time. Do you want to tell us kind of how you made that transition, or what that transition has been like for you?
What I didn't like about freelancing is that I felt like I was trading my time for money. And even though I left a full-time job to freelance because I thought it would be, you know, better work-life balance, it actually wasn't. I was still kind of chained to my desk 9 to 5. So I knew I wanted something that was going to be a business that I could really work on for me. You know, I always felt like I was making someone else's business better, and I was just kind of trundling along doing these products. So I wanted something for myself. And so I started the Design Academy thing, which is it's a course teaching developers how to design. I started it a few years ago, and I started by building an email list. So I had a very simple landing page with an opt-in form on. I spoke at conferences. I wrote guest posts. I didn't have anything to sell. I was just kind of trying to build an audience, because I knew that at some point I wanted to basically sell something to them. But at first I wanted to find out what they actually wanted. I wanted to find out whether, you know, can I actually teach developers how to design? Because it's all well and good being a designer and being like, oh, I can do this, I can show you how. But teaching it is quite hard. You need to actually learn how to teach. So I spent a few years doing that. Alongside that, when I was working with my clients, I made this really simple tool that I used with them, which was, now it's called Client Portal. Basically, all it was a thing that they go to on my website. They log in and they get a dashboard and see all their deliverables and the project status just in one page. It was really simple. I used it with my clients. Like I said, I was doing a lot of conference talks because I just wanted to get my name out there, even though I had nothing to sell, and talk to people and try and find problems that I could potentially solve. And I did a talk on freelancing and I mentioned this tool. After the conference, they kind of went around the room and said, you know, what's the number one takeaway from this conference? And I think more than 50% of people that they asked said, Laura's Client Portal, it's genius, where can I buy it? And I was like, oh, well, it's not for sale, but I guess it could be. It turned out that I had this product staring me in the face that I hadn't realized I could actually sell or that anyone else would want. And so Client Portal was actually my accidental first product. So I started selling that. I hired a developer after it made some initial money. I reinvested that into hiring a developer to make it into a WordPress plugin. It kind of grew from there. But what that led me to do, which I was really happy about, that gave me the time to kind of pull back on my freelancing work and actually focus on this course for Designer for Developers, which is what I really wanted to do. Because the problem that I had was when I was freelancing, I had no time to make a course for developers, or just no time, you know, to do anything. When it was in the evening, I didn't really want to keep working. Sometimes I did, but I was tired and I just didn't have the motivation or the urgency to actually do anything. So Client Portal was my first accidental product, which then allowed me to focus on a Design Academy too.
So I'm guessing you're pretty happy with the work-life balance that you've now been able to achieve, or would you say that's still work in progress?
It's definitely a lot improved. So I went full time in on products in about January. So it's still kind of new to me, this product thing. What's really cool about it though is I've had to take a lot of time off this summer for various reasons, and I haven't had a drop in income, which has been amazing. You know, if I had to take as much time off as I've had to take this summer back when I was freelancing, I'd be thinking, okay, you know, how am I going to pay my bills or something like that? So that's been really good. Not to say, though, that that would last forever. It wouldn't. It's so much work creating and maintaining a product. You know, you've got support that you've got to do. You've got to continue to develop the product. You've got to market it. You know, you've got to just do email and stuff like that. So it's a lot of work, but it doesn't feel like work anymore. So I do feel like I've got the work-life balance thing pretty good, because when I'm working, it doesn't feel like it. And so I'm really keen to help other people do the same if they want to. So with the teaching design for developers thing, the goal really is not just to teach them a bit of design, but to teach them design so they can get their amazing ideas out and get them in people's hands and get people to download them and want them and buy them, so that they can have the same kind of lifestyle business if that's what they're aiming for.
Sounds excellent. One of the things we ask everyone is if they have any specific advice for people who might be just getting started in the industry, maybe trying to break into it. Do you have any words of wisdom that you'd like to share to those people?
Yeah, I think if you're just getting started, and obviously I'm talking, you know, from a more of a design point of view, you know, I would say taking a little bit of time to learn design is going to be really valuable for a very long time. So, you know, don't worry too much about learning too many different frameworks or languages or all this kind of stuff. If you can just dedicate a bit of that time to learning design, and basically all that means is finding designs that you like, saving them somewhere, make sure you save them, and just kind of thinking about why you like them, and try to, you take some of those tips and use it in your own work as and when. You know, I don't mean you have to go full in learning design, but if you can do that, especially from the start, that's going to be so beneficial, you know, way down the line, because really design principles don't change. You know, it's different from the web development world where, you know, things are just changing so incredibly rapidly. But if you can learn a little bit of design and just kind of keep being able to tell the difference between design you like or good design and bad design, it's going to, you know, serve you for a long time. So I would just say, save design somewhere. I use a tool called Dropmark, which is just dropmark.com. It just gives you a little bookmarklet, and you can just save websites. You can use anything. You can save it to your computer, just save it to your bookmarks, you know, whatever. But really make sure you save it, because you might see a website you like and think, oh, I really like that. I'll remember that. And then when you need to design something and you've seen something somewhere before, I guarantee you will not remember what that website was. So that would be my number one tip, is just save things you like.
Awesome. And so we also like to talk about, you know, what resources or listeners might be able to go to learn. And you obviously provide that yourself. So would you like to give a plug there for your...
Yeah. So if you want to learn a bit about design, you can go to designacademy.io, where I, you know, have a ton of free content on different, you know, learning design principles. I also have a free email course, which is called Learn the Basics of Design in 6 Days. So you just have 6 days of your time. And every day I'll teach you a different principle. And the idea is, if you come into the email course with an idea or, you know, something that maybe you want to redesign, if you follow that course for the, you know, next 6 days, and you do the exercises in the course, you can drastically improve your design. And, you know, I have like a worksheets at the end where you can send me the designs and stuff like that, so I can see them. I always love it when people submit those, so I can see, you know, how they improve even just within the 6 days. And if you can find that at learndesigncourse.com.
And then how about any other plugs? Can people follow you on like Twitter, or are you active there, or any other social media places?
Yeah, I pretty much just use Twitter. So you can follow me at Laurium, which is Laurium. And yeah, that's pretty much where I hang out. So yeah, say hi.
All right. Thank you so much, Laura.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
That was Laura Elizabeth. Laura is a designer with a hankering for cross stitch and rockets. She runs Design Academy, which aims to help developers conquer their fear of design. She's also launched her first product called Client Portal, a client-friendly way to keep your projects organized.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter @SixFigureDev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.